This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. This week, we're going to review Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle, as well as talk about the Super NES Classic pre-order Nightmare. Joining me is review and previews editor at EGMNow.com, Ray Carcello. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me again, Mason.
Okay, so one of the games that has come out recently is Mario & Rabbids, the Kingdom Battle one. Did you have a chance to play that one yet?
Yes, I've actually beaten it. I did a full review, and this game has no right being as good as it is. I was actually really, really, really impressed with Mario & Rabbids, and it really shows how ubiquitous Mario is as a character, because you can put him into any scenario, any gameplay. He's done it over the years, go-karting, partying, baseball, teaching kids how to type, and he's successful. And he's done it again here with tactical strategy, and it's really a lot of fun and really, really impressive how good this game ended up being.
For me, when it comes to like strategy games like this, tactics games, it's most of the time I don't think they're kind of targeted towards kids. Do you think that's true? Like, do you think that maybe this was meant for an older audience?
No, not at all. Actually, I actually think this was actually meant as a way to, as a gateway, as a doorway to strategy games. I think Ubisoft did a really great job making this game highly accessible for younger audiences. You're still going to have to think, and there's still going to be a challenge, but they kept a lot of the systems pretty simple. They kept everything pretty straightforward. There's an exploration aspect of the game as well between battles that reminds you more of a Mario game. So I think they did a really good job of actually keeping the bar, the barrier of entry relatively low, so that kids of all ages could probably get into this and probably learn a thing or two about strategy. I mean, it definitely feels like, this will be the game you graduate to XCOM after this game. This is the game you start out with if you're trying to get people into tactical strategy. And that's not to say this is easy, because there is definitely some moments where the difficulty does ramp up, especially later in the game. But, as a strategy fan, I would have wanted a little bit more from the systems. I would have wanted a little bit more depth, a little bit more options in terms of the gameplay. But part of the reason why Ubisoft held off on that was so that anybody who is new to the strategy genre could really kind of get a grasp on everything that you can do in a tactical strategy game with this and not get overwhelmed.
I can see what you're saying, but I actually played a little bit of it myself, and I'm almost done with it, and I actually didn't like it. I thought that the first two worlds were way too long, and I've looked at other people's gameplays too. It's about, every world takes about 2 hours, and I don't think you can fast forward through it until you've already played the area. So you have to actually play through 2 hours of like tutorials damn near. And I just didn't like that. And it wasn't until like the end of World 3, I really started like, oh my God, now it's getting exciting. And it was only because for the first two worlds, you're kind of building up to like your abilities and your the setup. And I just didn't like that. It was way too slow. And that's why I was like, well, if it was made for kids, I don't know. I don't think it was really made. They tried too hard to make it for everybody. And maybe they should have just concentrated harder on, like, if it's going to be kidway, then let's make it really fast. You know, if it's going to be for adults, then let's make it a little bit more challenging earlier on. I don't think they they thought that through very well. But, like you said, you stick Mario on anything, it's going to sell.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I can definitely see your point, too. I mean, especially infancy for me, is the opposite, where I felt things started to really slow down later in the game because I felt everything started to get really repetitive. They stopped adding new things. I think it started to get into later in the game a little bit of a grind, but I can also definitely see where that's also where at that point you know all the systems, you know everything, so you could have the most fun messing around with. So it's interesting to see different perspectives on this, because it's definitely, I think, going to be something that I think you're either, it's going to be one of these games that you either love or hate, and I ended up loving it. So,
you know, I find that a lot with Mario games. You're either going to be 100% into it, or you're going to be 100% I'm not into it. Oh, but there is something I'm a little curious about when it comes to this game. Why didn't they put Rayman into it?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know if it's just because Rayman has been kind of, they kind of separated the Rabbids from Rayman a while ago. That kind of spun off and done the, did their own thing. But the, one of my other complaints was that this is a very small roster for a strategy game like this. You know, you're only allowed to use three characters at once. You don't get your last, I'm not going to spoil who it is, but you don't get your last character of the roster until very late in the game. Literally only a few stages left before the final boss, you know, and I think it would have been better if you had a larger roster and you could use more characters per battle, I think, would have been a better way to go. And, yeah, you could have easily done Rayman characters. You could also have done more Mario characters. Like, it just, it felt like that the roster that they used was solid, but they needed to expand on that, and I think give people more options. And I think, again, goes back to the fact that they were trying to make this as accessible as possible and make the barrier of entry lower, and not inundate you with a bunch of different characters and a bunch of different move sets. But in that regard, I think it also was missing something by not having characters like you said, maybe Rayman from the Rayman series where Rabbids originated from, or somebody else from the Mushroom Kingdom.
You know, you're right about that. I didn't even think of like three-man team is actually pretty low, especially when you're going up against maybe, I think, at 12 at most. But then sometimes they would respawn if you didn't finish fast enough. So you have three characters, and they have potentially an unlimited amount of characters based upon how many turns it takes for you to complete the actual stage fight. So you're right. Maybe it could have been like four or five people. I mean, could you imagine the fights then? You have so many different people jumping around everywhere. It probably would have been more interesting, too.
I think it would have been a lot more fun, a lot more chaotic for sure. Because, I mean, you do look at games like XCOM and you look at a strategy game, and typically, yeah, you have at least four or five characters in your party, and you can really kind of bring more people to kind of help balance things out. Because I think that's also a thing where one of the few things the game suffered from is that you get a little overlap with a lot of the characters. You know, there's only so many move sets. And again, I think they were trying to make it as accessible as possible. But as a strategy fan, I would have loved some more complex powers, and for each character to be able to wield more powers. So again, as much as I enjoyed it, and again, keeping in mind that this was made as a entry point, I think, for strategy folks, I think that there's so much potential with the core systems they have here, the really good core systems, that to have really built on them and really fleshed them out and really turned them into something that would have been also appealing to on every front for strategy fans.
Another game that is going to come out is a Resident Evil Revelations. And I remember that game actually came out on Nintendo's handheld, the 3DS. Why did they decide to bring it out again?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because this is technically the second time they ported it now to consoles. They also brought it to Xbox 360 and PS3. And it sold better there than they expected. And they feel that now would be another good time to, again, remaster it, get it out there for people. It's an easy way to make some money, but also they feel the install base now would be a good time to cash in, because it did okay on the 3DS. It didn't do great, and then there was a huge spike when they brought it to Xbox 360 and PS3, and I think that they're just hoping to kind of replicate that success again and get it into the hands of people who maybe not have gotten it before. And I think also at this point, capitalize on the success of Resident Evil 7, which was a huge hit earlier in the year. So they're probably trying to get, you know, bring people more Resident Evil as much as they can, as fast as they can, to capitalize on its popularity right now. Especially because if you're going to port anything over from 360 to PS3, the one that's probably most port ready is already another port in terms of, and that's Resident Evil Revelation.
Okay, so this game is actually really old. So where does this fit in the story of Resident Evil?
It's convoluted because it's a side adventure, right? So it's part of the main line, but I'm pretty sure it takes place between 4 and 5, if I remember correctly. You know, when you're playing Jill Valentine, basically, and it's you know, her adventure out at sea. It's, you know, she's basically one of the first people of the newly formed Bioterrorism Security Assessment Alliance, the BSAA, which really kind of came into being right after 4, because that's then when you know, and then 5 is basically continuing that, where you then go down into the savannah and you go into those villages, and then in 6 it really kind of ramps up the whole BSAA with Chris and Leon and everybody. So yeah, I'm pretty sure it takes place between 4 and 5, but closer to Resident Evil 5 on the main timeline.
I remember this game, and I remember when it came out on the 3DS, and I played it for like 2 seconds because I absolutely couldn't control the camera at all. You had to like move the gel around or whoever the person was, and then you had to move the camera, and then you had to shoot, and it was just such a horrible experience that I was like, well, I'm just not going to play it. And that's actually why I still haven't played it, even though it came out on the PS3. And maybe I'll give it a shot now, but in the port that came out now, is there any new features, or is this just playing the same game as the 3DS?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's more like playing the game that was on the 360 and PS3.
Okay.
There's raid modes, there's online challenges, there's leaderboards, there's things that there's more collectibles to find. But the big thing that they did when they took it from the 3DS to consoles was they fixed the camera, they fixed the controls. Because for me, I was the same way. I actually watched somebody else play it and review it for 3DS and said, no, I'm not interested in that because of the camera, because like I don't want to go back to the old days of Resident Evil cameras. Like, I don't want to go back to those third person cameras that you were constantly fighting to try and see what was around the next corner. But then when they changed it, when they brought it to consoles, they made it more Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 5 like in terms of how you control it. And for me, that was a huge improvement, and that definitely made the whole experience a lot better. So if you do play it, I would recommend you play it on consoles, whether it is now the new port for PS4, Xbox One, or even Xbox 360, PS3, because to me that is the definitive way to play Resident Evil Revelations. It just handles so much better. But yeah, but there's also things like raids and online modes, like where you can, and online challenges where you can kind of try and take on levels with time trials and things of that nature. But I wouldn't say there's no real difference between the PS4, Xbox One version and PS3, Xbox 360 version.
Another game I was hoping you had more information about is Destiny 2. I mean, I'm a pretty big fan of Destiny. I'm not going to say like the biggest one out there, but I enjoy the hell out of that game. Do you have any other information about Destiny 2, like what we can look forward to when it comes out?
It's right around the corner. without breaking NDAs. because I have people in the office who have actually already played it, who have actually seen a lot of it, have gotten in depth with it. If you like the first Destiny, you will like Destiny 2. It really does a nice job of continuing everything in terms of building on a lot of the systems from the first game. And I think that Destiny fans will enjoy Destiny 2. Obviously, I'm a little disappointed by the new Crucible, where it's 4v4 instead of 6v6. I personally wasn't a fan of shrinking the teams, but they feature more maps, but they're smaller maps to try and accommodate with lesser players. You know, and of course, the story is basically everybody loses their powers, and it starts off with you have to getting them back after this guy Gaul steals the he literally steals the Traveler out of Earth. There's new powers for each class. You have a third primary weapon that you can carry. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be, if you're looking for something that's going to be revolutionary, I think, in terms of the series, I think you might be a little disappointed. Because it really is just more, it is more Destiny. They've made some tweaks to things. Like I said, they pulled back on the Crucible. It went 4v4 instead of 6v6. Without spoiling anything, most of the gameplay is very, very similar. People who played the first Destiny played a lot of the first Destiny. to be able to jump right back into it, not really miss a beat. There's not a lot of carryover from the first Destiny to the second Destiny because you don't get like a lot of rewards or anything because obviously they're trying to start with a clean slate, especially because this is their first time playing on PC, putting it out there on PC and using Blizzard's BattleNet in order to do the multiplayer functions for the PC side of things. Of course, also unfortunately, the PC version comes a month after the console version because they're having a bit of trouble optimizing it. But Destiny 2 is around the corner. If you like the first Destiny, it's for better or worse, it's more of the same.
You know, the 4v4 thing with the Crucible, what's really funny about that, I was thinking, man, you're really going to see who the dead weight is now. You know, you're going to see who you've been carrying the entire time, right?
That's a good point because, I mean, yeah, when it's 4v4, you really need to do your own thing because if you don't work as a team, if you don't work as a cohesive unit, if you don't work well, it's very easily, you know, you can have your spot blown up. So you gotta focus and you gotta come ready to play because if not, you know, I played pretty well when I played the Crucible in the beta and whatnot, but and to some demos at different conventions, but it's not the case for everybody. And I yelled at a few of my teammates, but you know, we did what we had to do. We protected the points. That was the mode that we were playing. We had to protect the point from getting blown up. Very much, very Call of Duty esque in its objective, that mode. But you know, we won and we got it done. But not everybody pulled their weight. So.
You know, I'm just thinking like it's going to be kind of hard. Like I haven't played Destiny in a while though because I got really disappointed with the game, and I was hoping that this would kind of like revitalize my willingness to play it. But I'm going to have to really be working hard because I refuse to be dead weight. It's like the competitor in me is like it's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. It's like if I'm going to play online, I'm going to try and be good online.
Speaking of being good online, another game that I think you have to be really good at, just to have fun at, is Marvel vs. Capcom. They're coming out with the new one, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. Do you have any other kind of? Because I know this one's going to be coming out soon, right?
Yep, another September release coming around right around the corner. You know, still kind of waiting for. I think there's still a couple other characters that they might release, but right now I think the roster is pretty much solidified. I know a lot of people are mad because obviously there's no X-Men at all in this one, but that's because Disney is basically fitting the bill for this one with Capcom, and they're trying to promote all their movie franchises, so you're not going to get nearly as many. You're not going to get, you know, it's all for the Marvel side. It's Iron Man. It's Rocket Raccoon. They did get Spider-Man in just because of the recent cross back over with Sony and for Homecoming. But I'd be very surprised. As much as people desperately want Wolverine to come back to Marvel versus Capcom, I would be very surprised if somehow they were able to get Wolverine back until all this movie hoopla business is finally settled.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Who has like Fantastic Four and X-Men? Is that Fox? Fox has them, right?
That's Fox, yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to give them up anytime soon. That's a cash cow for them too, right?
Yeah, after the success of Logan, like they're trying to figure out how they can bring Wolverine back again because like it just was so successful. And same thing, and that too. And that's why also right now Deadpool has not been announced as a Marvel versus Capcom character. And people are kind of disappointed and they're kind of mad. And they wish that for video games, at least, that everybody would put their differences aside. But unfortunately, the movie industry is one instance where the movie industry is affecting the video game industry.
Are there any other games coming out in September?
Oh, my goodness. In September, I mean, you got Metroid Samus Returns. You've got Cuphead is coming in September. You've got, and this is all just off the top of my head. You've got lots of sports games coming out in September. if you're an NBA or an NHL fan, those are coming. Knack 2 is coming in September.
Knack 2, what's that? I've never even heard of that before. Knack 2?
So the first Knack was a PlayStation 4 launch title that was really bad. but because it was a PlayStation 4 launch title, it sold really well because people didn't want to listen. And we were like, it's just a tech demo. It's just a tech demo. Don't buy it. No. And people bought it anyway. But this time, and it's by Mark Cerny. Mark Cerny, of course, the architect of the PlayStation 4 and video game legend. He's worked on, you know, dozens of countless franchises over the years and done a really good job. But this was a case of Mark biting off more than he can chew. He was worried. He was helping to launch the PlayStation 4 while also writing and directing and working on gameplay for this game, which is his new passion project. And he just obviously he got too much at once. But for Knack 2, he at least has what he's done is he's kind of divvied it up. He of course is not launching a system right now. B, he brought in the writer from God of War to write this game. And that has allowed him to really just focus on the gameplay. And I'm not sure if I can talk about it yet, but I can say in a preview capacity that Knack is Knack already feels better than Knack 1. It feels more like a traditional action adventure game. It feels a lot more fluid. The world is like a lot more open and explorable, and the characters are the characters are more fleshed out than in the first game. And I think that where the first game was a very bare bones, you know, it was a tech demo. It was a very bare bones experience that kind of showed off the particle effects of the PS4, where it's this character named Knack. He's like a enchanted robot that can grow bigger or shrink by collecting certain particles that they call relics around him in the world. He can add them to his form, and he can get bigger until he's like 30 feet tall, or he can shrink down until he's only 2 feet tall to fit between narrow crevices. The first game was just basically showing off the ridiculous particle effects of the PS4. This game, Knack 2, as of right now, is feeling like a legitimate action-adventure game. So that is coming out the same day, just days before, a couple days before Destiny 2.
Oh, my God. When you said he would grab the particles and would grow bigger, I remember that game now. I forgot. I completely forgot about that game. Oh, my God. That was so bad. I remember that
exactly.
One.
It was so bad that you blocked it from your memory. The first game was pretty terrible. The second game, the new one, as shocked as we are that they made a sequel, not so bad so far.
Oh.
It's not so bad. Okay. I have issues. It ain't perfect. But it's at least playable now.
No, because I remember the other one. It was kind of just like a straightforward, you're going from A to B, and you're just grabbing stuff. And I was like, what is this? This is... like, this was just bad. I remember thinking that, too. And my friend was saying, we should get it. I was like, no, I'm not getting that. I'll wait a few months for another game.
Yeah, no, exactly. It was a lot of people, it had hype because it was a launch title for PS4. And that's all it had going for it. And the animation, you know, you give them credit where it's due. The animation was good, but that was really all you could say about the first Knack.
You know, something else I wanted to talk about that is, you know, talking about disappointment, right? Was the Super NES Classic pre-order stuff that happened. I was so upset. I mean, I had so many alerts for when this thing was going to go on pre, if it was, because I think a few months ago, didn't Nintendo say, hey, we're not going to allow pre-orders for the Super NES Classic? But I had, you know, the alerts anyways. And a couple weeks ago, all the pre-orders, suddenly Nintendo said, hey, we're going to let you pre-order it at 3 a.m. Like, what happened with this?
I really just think that Nintendo just loves trolling everyone at this point. I think, honestly, in terms of the pre-orders, I think they didn't know if they were going to have enough supply to do a pre-order sale. And then they did. And then when they realized they did, they wanted to get it out there as quickly as possible. And they wanted to see what the response was so that they could possibly then use that to calibrate how many more they would need to make for launch. Because, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I think this is going to be even more popular than the NES Classic just because you're getting a game that was never released before in terms of Star Fox 2. And I think, and this is Nintendo's strategy. Nintendo's doing this all the time. Nintendo loves only letting the supply be just a trickle, just trickle through from them. Even though the demand is through the roof, because they think it keeps the buzz around a product going longer by just letting things trickle through slowly and not letting everybody get their hands on them. And I mean, it worked to the point where the NES Classic was a huge success, even though they don't make it anymore. And that's my only concern for the SNES Classic is that, you know, will it be such a limited run kind of thing where you only have maybe 2 or 3 months to find it and then it's done again? I hope that's not the case, but you don't know with Nintendo. But again, it's they love the hype. They love constantly being in the news. They love people talking positively about all their products. Even, you know, they don't mind if they bash them for bad, for not having enough supply for the demand, because that means that people are talking positively about their products, and that's what is the most important thing to them, and to remind people they're the ones who lasted the first console war. They've weathered through all the other console wars. Nintendo will be here forever, and this is why, because they have this amazing library of games, this amazing library of IP that they can just constantly, whenever they want, can just go back to, redo, re-release, and put back out there. I mean, that's why people are so excited now. Metroid 2, this game is so old, and they're remaking it for 3DS, and that's coming out now, and it's gotten a ton of huge positive buzz. And then, even if Nintendo never makes anything original ever again, between Samus, Donkey Kong, Mario, Legend of Zelda, and all the other great games they have, they can just, you know, Star Fox, they can just kind of just keep rehashing everything, and they'll be fine.
You're right about that, but I think there's going to be some backlash if they keep doing this, because for me, every time they bring something out, like the NES Classic, or in this case, the Super NES Classic, I start thinking to myself, man, isn't this what Beanie Babies did, where they sat there and said, oh, there's a limited amount, you better go out and get this Beanie Baby, you'll never see this one again, and people run out and get it, and then it turns out that, oh, it wasn't as limited as you thought it was. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but the message is kind of the same. So I don't know if they keep like messing with me, I'm going to get upset. Like,
no, I completely understand that. I think that people will get to that at some point, but I think it's still a ways away. And I think Nintendo is good at, sometimes they lose touch with their consumer base, but they're usually really good at getting it back. And I think that right now they're really honed in with what their consumer wants and what gamers want in general. Especially older gamers, and I mean with the success of the Switch alongside SNES and NES Classics, I think Nintendo is right back where they want to be, where they're hip, they're cool, they're right on top of everything, and I think they'll know when it's time to either re-release these limited edition consoles or go forward with the next one. Or just to keep them going, because I think they have an idea right now of what people want, how much money people are willing to spend, and they just like, they like everybody talking positively about them, like, even though we can't withstand their supply and demand, process procedures.
Yeah, I think people are going to eat this stuff up until they start bringing out the classic Wii, and then people are going to be like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah. No more motion control.
Before I let you go, there was something that I read recently. It was actually, it wasn't even read. The first thing I saw was a picture, and it was when DC's bringing out this whole Batman becoming the Joker thing. Did you read up on that or see anything else about it?
Yeah, so this is the new metal event, the new metal alternate universe kind of thing, where it's the dark universe that is kind of like a direct mirror opposite of ours. It's all about these evil doppelgangers from this other universe who have been waiting for eons for the right events to take place, can now finally break through, and with everything else, with all the other garbage going on in the DC universe right now, with Watchmen and all that other stuff, these demons have finally found a way to break out, and now you've got all these Batmen who have become villains from this other universe. So you have a Batman who was the Joker, you have a Batman who basically an evil Batman that steals the Flash speed called Red Death. You have a Batman that merges with Doomsday called Devastator. You have a Batman called Murder Machine because he becomes Cyborg. And it's basically all about, you know, it's just a universe full of these evil characters. And when you think of the most dangerous character in the DC universe, the most dangerous character in the DC universe is actually Batman. You know, they prove that with the OMAC storyline where Batman knows, with enough time to prepare, Batman knows everything about everyone, and he knows all their weaknesses, and he will not hesitate to take them down. So, you know, he is the greatest threat but also the greatest watchdog in the DC universe. So this dark universe is interesting because it's all about what would happen if all these classic characters were more like Batman. Well, they would probably be even more evil and more dangerous and more twisted and sick and demented. And so now you have a metal-clad Batman Joker with a even more gruesome grin, and he has pet zombie vampire Robins. And it's an interesting event. It's an interesting twisted take on Batman from this new multiverse. How the DC Universe will get past it, how much this will actually affect it long-term, I don't know. But I think it's just an interesting different take on characters. And because I'm a huge Batman fan, I appreciate them just acknowledging that, yes, Batman is the most important character in the DC universe. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that. Yeah, it's just all about how twisted can they make Batman. And I think that that's a scary proposition for the DC universe and how they are going to overcome it and how will the Justice League overcome, you know, while at the same time they're dealing with Rebirth with Dr. Manhattan and all this other stuff, and it's an interesting idea. I again go back to I think we've talked about this before. I think there's just too many events going on in comics to keep people interested. But this does seem like this one definitely has piqued my interest.
You're right about that. I don't think a lot of people realize how dangerous Batman is. I would tell this to my friends, like, I absolutely love Batman because he's simply a man with money and he's surrounded by superheroes who could easily squish him, and yet he can command just the same amount of respect and fear as like Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, Green Lantern, and he has nothing but his, you know, billions of dollars. That's a hell of a superpower.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's the superpower that we all wish we had, but we could if we got really, really lucky with the lottery. We could be super rich.
And that's another, you know, that's another thing. I think they've always talked about that when it comes to Batman. What was it in Batman Beyond where he always had backups for a backup, and he didn't realize that until he was like the old man, and he's like, yeah, you know, I could have taken out Superman at any point, but you know, I needed everybody on the council to agree because I'm just a man. And I always loved that about him. He had contingency plans for contingency plans, and it's yep. really cool to see them sit there and say, hey, this is why he's really big and bad and why you guys should be afraid of him too. Like, thank God he's on our side.
Well, I mean, that was even Grant Morrison's crazy Batman of Zarenna storyline, where basically if somebody tried to attack Bruce Wayne's mind, he basically trained a Batman under his Batman persona. And then Batman of Zarenna comes out, and he's all in purple and pink, he's carrying a baseball bat, but he's still basically a version of Batman, he's just a little more twisted. But it's because Bruce Wayne's mind has been compromised. And so his goal when he's not fighting crime in the city is for him to then try and find out who attacked Bruce Wayne's mind so that he can then go back to being regular Batman. Like, that's a crazy idea that he has a contingency plan that it's like, well, if my mind is ever attacked, I need a Batman to save Batman. So I will implant into myself a subconscious Batman. Like, it's just absolutely insane.
I think that's one of the probably the nice things about Batman is he can all, like, I guess as a writer, you'll be able to write him out of any situation. And it's plausible because Batman is like, he's always 20 steps ahead of even himself.
It's been 50 years of bat shark repellent. That's all it's been. I tell people all the time. It's however you feel about the Adam West Batman, it was a perfect adaptation of the character in the way of the time, because it showed that, yeah, it might have been cheesy, but again, it showed even then that Batman always had a way out of everything, and no matter what happened to him, he has a contingency plan. So I call it the bat shark repellent effect, where because I'm not sure if you remember the Adam West movie where literally a shark comes up and jumps on his leg, and then in the bat copter, Robin throws down a can of bat shark repellent because he's got bat manta ray repellent, bat moray eel repellent, and bat shark repellent there, because of course if they're flying over the ocean, any of these things might attack him. Robin drops it down, he sprays the repellent, the shark falls off and dies. And it's like, it's just we've had that for his whole history now, or at least since then, where he always will have a way out. He is the best. He, as long as he has time to plan, Batman can get out of any situation.
Well, thanks so much, Ray, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those that are listening, where can they find you at?
As always, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Just search at Ray Carcillo, R-A-Y-C-A-R-S-I-L-L-O. And if you want to read my stuff, you can read my full Mario and Rabbids review. And you can look forward to my other video game reviews over on EGMNow.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.